Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Greetings. My name is Casey Luskin, and welcome to the ID the Future podcast, being broadcast from Seattle, Washington, with Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture. Today we have with us a special guest, Dr. Thomas Woodward, author of the new book, Darwin Strikes Back. And we have Dr. Woodward with us on a phone call today, and he's going to discuss his new book, Darwin Strikes Back, with us. And Dr. Woodward, am I right in saying that book is available on Amazon.com?
It is. It's available through almost any major bookstore now. I think all the chains are carrying it. It's available through many venues.
Okay. So Darwin Strikes Back, Defending the Science of Intelligent Design, just came out within the last month. Is that about right?
Yeah. Official publication date, November 1st. So we're just at the 1 month mark.
Okay. And your first book, Doubts About Darwin, came out a few years ago, and it was actually an award-winning book. Is that right?
Yeah, I was very fortunate to receive a National Book Award in a balloting at Christianity Today. They have an annual poll, and so it was the culture division. And I feel I'm in good company because Bill Dembski won the year after that. So we kind of shook hands and as it were, congratulated each other on that wonderful opportunity to have people hear about our books.
That's definitely an honor. So I'm assuming that Darwin Strikes Back is a sequel. Is that right? And if so, how does it serve as a sequel to your first book?
Well, it's exactly that. Darwin Strikes Back follows, as it were, the story from around 1996 through, let's say, a few months ago, when I finally had to stop writing the manuscript and said, basically, my editor and I said, cut! And we just basically, had to break off the story where it was in the springtime of 2006. And the first book really laid the foundation for a kind of a thorough understanding of the historical roots, the background, if you will, of the intelligent design movement as a group of renegade thinkers, skeptics, intellectuals, mostly scientists, who were seeing the prevalence of a whole network of cracks in the foundation of neo-Darwinism, and who were saying, hey, the empirical evidence says microevolution, yes, macroevolution driven by nature, absolutely not. And, of course, I laid the foundation with emphasis on Denton, Phil Johnson, Michael Denton, Philip Johnson, both of them authors of very powerful books critiquing the neo-Darwinian paradigm. And then I followed on a little bit into the emergence of Behe in my earlier book and Dembski, but kind of had to keep it brief. Well, this new book, Darwin Strikes Back, is much more emphasizing the roller coaster ride of the design movement as it engages since 1996-97 with its opponents, especially focusing on the work of Behe, Michael Behe, and Bill Dembski, the chief architect, if you will, the intellectual architect of the outlines of the new paradigm emerging, the design paradigm, and also Wells and Steve Meyer right there in the Discovery Institute. So it's focused on those guys, the intellectual argumentative battle, if you will, swirling around their work, and the whole culture level. I go to the level of what's happening in the U.S. and overseas as design is being attacked, and then the design advocates are replying. It's been a lot of fun to write it.
And since you're a scholar of rhetoric, Dr. Woodward, I imagine that you really couldn't dream up a better issue for you to cover. I mean, there is so much back and forth in this issue. You must just be in heaven when you study this stuff.
I am in rhetorician's heaven. It's a rhetorical delight to just analyze, you know, how people are framing the issue, the stories that they're telling, the nightmares that in the side of Darwinism. I mean, they're painting nightmares that are really staggering in their scariness, if you will. I mean, they'll say if intelligent design wins, science decays, crumbles, goes into a dark age, and even the U.S. will lose its democracy. I mean, these are bizarre, absurd, I mean, laugh-provoking. When I tell an audience, usually a public audience, they just start laughing when they hear these dire predictions. And so we call these such framing of a story, we call them fantasy themes. And rhetoricians have been studying these for 4 or 5 decades. And this is some of the juiciest fantasy themes you can ever uncover. And just to see the panic and the Darwinian side and the emotion, the vitriol, it's rather amazing. And rhetorically, I mean, it gives me a lot of fodder for my analysis and my history.
Well, wow, you are just blazing through all the questions that I had set up for you, Dr. Woodward, because I wanted to ask you about those fantasy themes and about, you know, how you see all this rhetoric going on. Maybe if I could try to head you off before you answer this question.
Okay.
One of the different responses that you talk about from Darwinists is sort of the head-in-the-sand approach and mm-hmm. the ad hominem attack approach, where, you know, Darwinists will say, if we just pretend that intelligent design isn't there, maybe it will go away. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Oh, yeah. Let me just first talk about the head in the sand. That's a very good way. I should have used that in my book. I needed to have you as my editor, Casey. it's like pretending and really speaking and writing as if there is no major concern. One of these is the article in National Geographic that came out. It was a cover story, I think, a year and a half, 2 years ago, which blazed the question, was Darwin wrong, on the cover? And, of course, in like 5-inch letters inside, a huge, no, you know, shouted out. And in that article, you find you find no mention of any of the major figures or the major arguments of intelligent design. I mean, I went through the article with a fine-tooth comb, and I thought, this is truly amazing. The most cutting-edge critique and proposal of a way that you can detect design is not even mentioned, you know, in that lengthy article. This kind of like stopgap. It's all you hear about is the more traditional, you know, creationist approach, Genesis-oriented approach. Secondly, another example of that is the massive final volume from the computer, if you will, of Stephen Jay Gould, his book, The Structure of Evolutionary Theory. I think it's over 1,400 pages in length. I would expect he would have dozens of references of ID. Intelligent design doesn't even appear anywhere. I mean, the name Behe doesn't even appear anywhere in the book, which is quite astounding. In other words, he said, well, let me just ignore this. Maybe it'll go away.
Yes, I think you're right. I have the book right here, and I'm looking at the index, and I do not see an entry for intelligent design. So, Tom, you're absolutely correct. Stephen Jay Gould's magnum opus, The Structure of Evolutionary Theory, doesn't really talk about this modern movement.
Well, can I jump in and make something, make a comment about what he does talk about? The early chapters deal very briefly with the origin of life issue. And amazingly, Gould says that the origin of life issue doesn't even fall in the purview of scientific reasoning. In other words, he makes a statement and a very important footnote as he gets into the first third of his book, that he's going to take the origin of life issue and set it to one side and just kind of, you know, write it off as something that we can't really approach, at least as evolutionary biologists. Now, that's quite normal for evolutionary biology to say that this is kind of out of their purview. But Gould steps, you know, one step further from that and basically says, I don't even want to see it as, you know, an issue that science can really get its hands on. And this kind of attitude of just writing off, or at least, you know, ignoring the origin of life issue, again, is an indicator of how bad it's going in that area. I have two chapters in my book that deal with the origin of life issue, and I think that this is an area where intelligent design is almost granted. And many, many scholars who 20 years ago would have said, well, no, we have our best people working on it. The more we learn, the more it appears that the first cell is absolutely unthinkable apart from intelligence.
This is all really fascinating. Now, there are some Darwinists who don't engage in fantasy themes, and they don't necessarily stick their head in the sand, and they actually are trying to address the science. One of the most striking things I read in your book was that one of these evolutionary biologists, Neil Shanks, made some misdirected scientific arguments that you discuss in your book. Mm-hmm. And then he also compared one ID proponent to those who, quote, hang around schoolyards peddling soft drugs so that a taste of the harder stuff will follow. So we see here, is this some kind of an ad hominem attack theme going on? And if so, do you see this very common in Darwinist writing?
Yes, the latter point is very important. Neil Shanks, professor, I think, of philosophy up at East Tennessee State from Great Britain, originally, I think, is an absolute perfect example of this contemptuous, very hostile rhetoric that we're finding very, very common now. And in his book, God, the Devil, and Darwin, published by Oxford University Press, he basically takes intelligent design theorists, the critics of neo-Darwinism, and paints them as dangerous extremists. One of his parts of his book explodes with the word extremist. Now, I guess I could turn around, return the favor, and start calling Darwinists extremists, because they rule out the possibility of detecting design, you know, but I try not to do such things. Well, he goes on and he basically says that Phil Johnson, in his writings, is like you said, somebody who hangs around the schoolyard peddling soft drugs, hoping to move the kids up into the hard stuff that he can get them hooked on. Well, that is what we call irresponsible rhetoric. That is, you know, egregious, going over the line in painting Phil Johnson as the ultimate villain. I mean, he's a seductive villain. And such villainizing or rumor-mongering and all the stuff that's going on indicates to me that the Darwinian paradigm is absolutely in a state of collapse at this point. I mean, in terms of persuasive force for intelligent, educated people, unless a person is already committed to a naturalistic or atheistic framework, the rhetoric justice is collapsing.
Well, I happen to be a big Star Wars fanatic, Tom, and so I was overjoyed to see, obviously, allusions to Star Wars in your book, Darwin Strikes Back, Empire Strikes Back. It's pretty obvious, and I think you even followed that through a little bit in your book, not too much. So I have to ask for my own personal interest, are you a Star Wars fanatic?
I am indeed.
You are indeed. Okay, well, that's good. Then we won't throw this podcast away. We will release it. And the second question I have is, I mean, do you see some similarities between the fight over between the rebellion and the Empire in Star Wars and the current ID evolution debate, if we can engage in our own little fantasy theme here?
Yeah, well, I'd be glad to build a fantasy theme here. It's a very, very positive fantasy theme, I think, and that is that there is a sense of empire that has existed for some time. The empire, in this case, is the neo-Darwinian empire, very powerful, very well-funded. They hold basically control of the high ground politically, you know, in terms of the power structures of our own country and around the world. I think around the world, neo-Darwinism prevails as the only, as it were, acceptable way of thinking in most universities. There may be a few exceptions, but most universities, neo-Darwinism is never publicly questioned. And so the fact that a small group of skeptics, very, very clear-thinking and armed not with, as it were, lightsabers, but armed with good questions. Philip Johnson stresses identifying the right question to ask. The fact that such a small band of ragtag, if you will, band of skeptics and intellectuals could literally bring to its knees a huge empire through very carefully timed questioning and critiquing, if you will, the attacks, I think is just showing that the empire, for all of its gross or vast, you know, power is very, very brittle. It's very shaky, and ultimately, who wins is not ID or so much or Darwinists. What wins is nature. Nature is speaking. Nature is making herself very abundantly clear, in what she says about her complexity, and the ability of nature, as it were, to build the complexity of nature on its own, that notion has fallen apart in our time. And I think the ID story is all about that, letting nature speak for herself.
It's very interesting, Dr. Woodward, and I appreciate your time here. I guess my last question for you is, will the Darwinists now strike back at your book?
Oh, I expect lightning strikes any second. I see the lightsaber coming down on my head, so I think I better unsheathe my lightsaber and get ready to defend myself against the death blow here.
Okay, Tom. Well, we're gonna return to reality here. Thank you for this interview, for our podcast. It's really great to have you on the show. And good luck with your book, and we look forward to hearing more good things from you. Again, the title is Darwin Strikes Back, Defending the Science of Intelligent Design, and it's available at Amazon.com. And thank you very much, Dr. Thomas Woodward, for being on the show.
Thank you, Casey, for inviting me.
Thanks for listening. This is Casey Luskin with the ID the Future podcast, being broadcast from Seattle, Washington, with the Discovery Institute, signing off.
Music on ID the Future comes courtesy of composer Yuri Mamchur. Visit www.yuriproductions.com and check out his latest CD, In the Harbor. This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Discovery President is Bruce Chapman. ID the Future Managing Editor is Robert Crowther. And the producer is Keith Bennett. ID the Future and ID Science in the News is copyright Discovery Institute 2006. For more information, visit www.discovery.org or www.idthefuture.com. Thank you.